The next topic, Shakespeare's history plays. Introduction. Shakespeare wrote some 10 plays dealing with the history of England. Roughly speaking, they cover 350 years from 12 to 1550. Their titles are given here under. First, Richard III. Second, the three parts of Henry VI and Richard II. Fourth, the two parts of Henry IV. Fifth, King John. Sixth, Henry V. And seventh, Henry VIII. In the writing of the last play, most probably Fletcher had also a hand. These historical plays are based upon English history, but they are not to be read as if they were pages from history. They are work of art like other play of Shakespeare, even though they were conceived within a historical framework. Shakespeare's history play are a product as well as an expression of the feeling of patriotism, which was intensified in the Elizabethan England by her continual war with Spain, which culminated in the celebrated defeat of the Spanish Armada in 1588. All of Shakespeare's history play were written in the period from 1588 to 1598, when patriotic feeling were at the highest pitch. One usual manifestation of the patriotic impulse is the awakening of a new interest in the history of the country. In the Elizabethan age, many chroniclers, the most important of whom were Stowe and Hollinshed, took upon themselves the task of organizing at the bit of the 10 known part of English history into well-knit chronicles. These chronicles were not objective record of history. However, as much of hearsay, legend, and even myth was inextricably mixed up with truth. It was only with Bacon's Henry VII that the art of near scientific historiography began in England. Shakespeare borrowed the historical framework of all his history play almost exclusively from the chronicles of Hollinshed. Shakespeare's patriotic fervor, which he shared with his countrymen, abundantly manifest itself in his history play. In the view of Hardin Grace, it is England which is the hero in these plays. One of Shakespeare's major aim in writing history play was to make Englishmen proud to be being Englishmen. Such glowing praise of England as by the dying John of Gaunt of Richard II must have been received by the audience with thunderous applause. This royal throne of king, this sceptred isle, this earth of majesty, this is seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for himself against infection and the hand of war, this happy breed of man, this tight little world, this precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall, or as a moat defensive to a house, against the envy of less happier lands, this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this streaming balm of royal kings. Henry V's words before Harfleur are of the same nature. And you good, you man, whose limbs were made in England, so us here, the metal of your posture let us sever, that you are worth our breeding, which I doubt not. For here is nature of you so mean and beast, that hath not noble lustre its newer eyes. Such passage is would have certainly increased the favor of the audience. These history plays were thus not only a product of the patriotic spirit, they were also calculated in infuse patriotic spirit into others. They made a special play for national unity by showing that foreign aggression was always helped whenever there was internal dissension in the country. Now those her princes are come home again, come the three corner of the world in arm, and we shall sock them, not shall make us rue, if England to itself do rest but true. From King John. A Mirror of Kings. If Shakespeare is moved by patriotic impulse, it does not mean that this represents each and every English king as a hero of impeccable character. In fact, as Dawson suggests, Shakespeare's king can be divided into two classes, King John, Richard II, and Henry VI. Embody the weakness of English kings, whereas in Henry IV, Henry V, and Richard II are studied of kingly strength among themselves. These weak and strong king constitute practical study of king and kingship. Dowden sum up the point well. John is the royal criminal, weak in his criminality. Henry VI is the royal saint, weak in the saintliness. The feebleness of Richard II cannot be characterized in a word. He is a graceful, sentimental monarch. Richard III, in the other group, is a royal criminal, strong in his crime. Henry IV, the prying, bowling rogue, is strong by a fine craft in dealing with events, by resolution and policy, by equal caution and daring. The strength of Henry V is that of plain heroic magnitude, thoroughly sound and substantial, founded upon the eternal verities. Here, then, we may recognize the one dominant subject of the histories, which how a man may fail and how a man may succeed in attaining a practical mystery of the world. Shakespeare's history plays are thus, to borrow the word of Sickles, a mirror of kings. The mirror will enable by English king to discover this his real identity and to correct himself in those respects in which he finds himself lacking, in comparison with the past English king who figure in these plays. Though in a evidently different manner, Shakespeare instructs the English king as a Machiavelli had done in the work of Prince. And what can be wiser and more incontrovertible than lesson of history? Their lesson. Shakespeare's history play are in a class apart from his tragedies and comedies, though sometimes there appears to be a link between them. In Shakespeare's own time, tragedies and history play were often confused together, but it is clear that the latter, unlike the former, do not fathom the final problem of life and death and the nature of evil. Meredith said that life is a comedy for those who think and a tragedy for those who feel. But Shakespeare's history play deal neither with much thought nor with feelings. Their study in action of the absence of it and the consequence which follow therefrom. Dowden observe in this connections in noted comma, the character in the historical play are conceived chiefly with reference to action. The word represent in the these play is not so much the word of feeling or thought as the limited word of the practicable. The histories, like the tragedies, are for the reader of a school of discipline, but the issue with which they deal are not the infinite issue of life and the feeling which they leave us it that a wholesome mundane pity, a terror, or a scene of a strong mundane satisfaction. In order to come close, the lesson of Richard II can easily be perceived to be whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Sometimes such a lesson as the sin of father shall be visited upon the children to be to the third or the fourth generation. Is obvious. Mainly, however, the history's emphasis the evil consequence of crime, folly, error, the inaction on the part of the king, which plunged the country into ruin. Shakespeare, obvious hero among the English king in history, in Henry V, who is distinguished alike by his flavor as by his moral equipoise. His is the philosophy of action, righteous and meaningful action, which leads the prosperity of himself and for his nation. Essay on Kingly Prerogatives. Shakespeare's history play are, broadly speaking, so many essays on kingly prerogatives. The king is vested with near divine privilege, but he is also saddled with an wondrous responsibility, which he is called upon to perform, the indicating himself all along from King John to Henry VIII. We find kingship fraught with temptation, danger and insecurity. The insecurity of the life also, sometimes this kingship is eulogized to the extent reminiscent of the doctrine of divine right of king, which envisaged a king to be the deputy of God on earth. Not all the water in the rough rude sea can wash the blame off from anointed king. The breath of worldly man cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord. From Richard II. Shakespeare fidelity of history. A very important question regarding Shakespeare's history play is as to how far he has adhered to the historical facts as represented by the Elizabethan chronicle writer like Stowe and Hollinst. Obviously enough, Shakespeare had to depart from a number of facts or to modify them appropriately in accordance with his dramatic needs. Historical facts do not always arrange themselves in the form of several well-defined, compact play as Shakespeare has given us. They have to be manipulated to make them amenable to dramatic treatment. It may amount to some falsification of history, or at least the imposition of the dramatist point of view on the historian interpretation of it. In Shakespeare, we do meet with quite a few daring historical inaccuracies and many minor to one. But he should not be conjured on this score, as he is a dramatist and artist and not a historian. If one depart from the known historical fact, one is not a good historian, but one may still be a good dramatist. Shakespeare had be reconciled the fact of history with the form of the drama. An unswerving fidelity of historical fact is not to be looked for in the work of the dramatist. What he is accepted to be true to is the spirit of the age he is representing in his drama and the inner truth rather than trapping of history. Thus the dramatist can be allowed much more of liberty than the historian. It may be pointed out that Shakespeare does adhere to much of the truth of history as recognized by his contemporaries. In this respect, he is much more responsible than his predecessor and contemporaries like Pilly and Green. Shakespeare dramatized history, whereas Pilly and Green went to further than travestying it. In their history play James IV and Edward I, it must be pointed out, however, that Marlowe in Edward II is much more accurate in his treatment of history and a much greater artist than Pilly and Green. Marlowe was a worthy preceder of Shakespeare as a dramatizer of history. The mode of Shakespeare's treatment of history in his history play is substantially the same as Marlowe's in his Edward II. Both of them adhere to the major event as recorded in history and the essential trait of those persons they are dealing with, but the mass of historical fact do not straitjacket them. These facts as much guide them as discipline them. Both of them keep themselves as far as possible within the bound of the historical truth, but they give themselves allowance to swear from the winner, the dramatic need urges them to do so. In Shakespeare's history play, the deed passed ranging from 1200 to 1550 come vivid the breathing with life. Even if he has falsified history a little, he has the least vivified it, which no historian could or possibly can. Their composite character. As we have already said, Shakespeare history play are a link between his comedy and tragedy. In fact, they are not only link but play of composite character, including the element of both comedies and tragedies. History is a vast tragic comedy. So are Shakespeare's history play. In them, Shakespeare does not merely aim at giving a flat picture of history. He rather gives it a new breath and a new life by admitting scenes of low life. As Sir Walter Raleigh observed, he ventured the intermix and treatment of high political affair with familiar picture of daily life. He admitted together, to quote some critic, in inverted comma, courts and taverns, king and highwaymen, diplomatic conference, battle street balls, and the humor of low life, he revived deed princes and heroes and set them in action on a stage crowded with life and manner. Inverted comma closed. Shakespeare's scenes of crowd and motley natured humanity was captured with success only by Sir Walter Scott in his historical novel A Couple of Centuries After Him. The topic Shakespeare's history plays over.